from an undisclosable location for reasons of security and therefore insecurity. This is the one, the only, what I call the mothership, that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening, everybody. I hope you had a pleasant 4th of July Wednesday. Don't you just hate it when it falls in the middle of the week? It's almost as bad as when it falls on a Sunday, because then we don't get another day off. But unfortunately, when it falls on Wednesday, many have to go back to work on Thursday, and it's like, oh, man. Well, you know, I get emails from time to time saying, Coast is not this, and Coast is not that. I know. But can you believe the political weirdness that just goes on, even about Independence Day? Well, here's the thing. This is just my view of the world. We fought for it one time. If necessary, we'll fight for it again. Know what I mean? Tonight, Chuck Bergman, the psychic cop from Salem, Massachusetts. You know, Salem, that whole witch-burning thing. Oh, she's really good-looking. She must be of the devil. You better set her on fire, morons. Anyway, Chuck Bergman is the psychic cop, and I spoke with him for just a couple of minutes earlier, and he's a third-generation medium and recalls being able to communicate with the other side since the age of six. Kind of like Doc out of The Shining. Anyway, this is going to be quite a good one. Now, we'll bring him on as quickly as possible. Very interesting. I like to look at InfoWars because Alex is a good friend to Coast, and we are to Alex. On InfoWars, it says Army Manual outlines plan to kill rioters and demonstrators in America. Warning shots will not be fired. Well, what makes you think we're going to give any? So go easy with that. Let's just go easy on each other, and perhaps we'll just muddle through it without too much unpleasantness. An ex-FBI employee claims she saw angels at Flight 93. I don't write it, I just read it. A former police officer who retired from the FBI due to post-traumatic stress disorder linked to her role in the aftermath of the September 11 terror attacks has written a book about seeing legions of angels guarding the Pennsylvania site where a hijacked airliner crashed. That would be Lily Leonardi. She served as a liaison between law enforcement and the families of the passengers. Mm-hmm. Bones of 200 soldiers from the time of Christ so well preserved in bog that their DNA can be studied. This is from redicecreations.com. That's Henrik Palmgren. Had him on the program before. And we shall have to have him again. Danish archaeologists have reopened a mass grave of scores of slaughtered Iron Age warriors to find new clues about their fate and the bloody practices of Germanic tribes on the edge of the Roman Empire. Bones of around 200 soldiers have already been found preserved in a peat bog near the village of Alken on Denmark's Jutland Peninsula. They're so well preserved that they may be able to extract their DNA and study it. Unbelievable. But there's more. ACTA, Internet Censorship Treaty, overwhelmingly defeated. Arguably the most draconian internet control legislation penned thus far. It's been overwhelmingly rejected by European lawmakers following months of protests and activism undertaken by thousands across the continent. So what does this tell you? It tells you, when you protest, when you do something, it has an effect. So just keep that in mind. The more we talk about this stuff on Coast to Coast AM and the others who are doing it on myriad websites and blogs across the world, like I always say, there's a lot more of us than there are of them. The British police will be for the first time armed with the same advanced weapons as British soldiers use in conflict zones in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Ministry of Defense has put contracts for 30,000 modern assault rifles out to supply the civilian police with state-of-the-art weaponry by 2014. Isn't that funny? The bobbies for so long were unarmed, and when that whole those bombings in Rome back in the 80s. I can't remember where else, but the Rome airport got hit on over the Christmas holidays. The police were so upset that they started carrying their little Heckler & Koch MP5 submachine guns, and they were They were just depressed. It's just deplorable that police should have to be deployed in this manner. The Fukushima reactor meltdown was a man-made disaster, says an official report. Last year's accident at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant was a man-made disaster caused by poor regulation and collusion between the government, the operator, and the industry's watchdog, a report has said. Half of German teens are unsure Hitler was a dictator, and Google Brain recognizes cat images. One last thing. This is a bit strong. Gaga perfume, Lady Gaga. The Gaga perfume, created using a blend of human blood, semen, and poisonous extract. We good here? All right. CERN, by the way, is uncertain. God particle likely discovered. Scientists working at the world's biggest atom smasher in Switzerland say they have discovered what could be the long sought after God particle, so named because it's believed to give all matter in the universe size and shape. We will follow that one closely. Wouldn't it be nice if we could keep that in a black box? Chuck Bergman, the psychic cop from Salem, Massachusetts, is next on Coast to Coast AM. Do stand by. John B. Wilson with you tonight, covering for Mr. George Norrie, who's a traveling man right at the moment. He'll be back on Monday, and then I'll be with you again tomorrow night. So it's going to be, it'll be a zombie weekend, but I'll try and hold up my end of the deal, and you just hold up your end, and we'll be fine. Now, Chuck Bergman, retired Salem, Massachusetts police officer, third-generation medium, recalls being able to communicate with the other side since age six, spent many years in development circles learning meditation techniques that have helped to fine-tune his gift. He has completed classes in psychic mediumship, advanced mediumship, and Reiki. He just finished his second book, which chronicles his life. And let me see here. He had his book, The Psychic Cop, and then another book, The Everything Guide to Evidence of the Afterlife. And while we're talking with him, you can look at chuckbergman.com, B-E-R-G-M-A-N. Chuck Bergman, welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Good evening.
Well, good evening to you, John, and what an honor and a very big pleasure to be here tonight.
Great to have you. I'm telling you, and when I began to read all of this stuff that you've been involved in, it's extraordinary. So let's get rolling. So since 6 years old, what sort of effect did that have on you, and what happened to cause you to discover that you had psychic abilities?
This is a pretty good starting point for me. I would say, first of all, even though I retired from Salem, Massachusetts, I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. And it was around the age of six. I recall playing in my backyard, and I was pinning on a police badge that I'd made out of aluminum foil. And when I was putting this badge on my shirt, it kept falling off and kept falling off. And like little boys get upset and, you know, you stomp your feet, start crying a little. I heard a man's voice come into my head, but it sounded like a voiceover male, if you will. It was that clear, John.
Uh-oh.
I know, here we go. And the voice said, "That's okay, Chuck. One day you'll wear a real badge." And being a little, you know, the age of six, it frightened the heck out of me. I remember running into the house and telling my mother about it, who was a medium but kept it very secretive. My mom was from England, and it was rather taboo at the time. In fact, I had heard stories later in life that my mom's sister was also a medium, and because of things she would tell people, eventually ended up in an insane asylum. So my mother was rather afraid of the whole world of the, you know, mediumistic events going on, and she kept telling me it was only my imagination, that it would go away, and, you know, just let it be.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
Before we get into the specifics, now, you've been doing this for a long time, and we'll get into some of the crimes that you've solved and so forth, but is there something in your experience that suggests to you that some of these, I want to call them spirits, are those who have passed into to the other side, but who can communicate with this side, do they seem to know who's safe to talk to and who isn't? Obviously, they can't just come up to a random person, might like send them screaming off in the distance, all fuzzy around the edges, yelling, "Who am I?"
I think that they try to talk to most of us, and it's amazing the number of people that I give readings to, especially when I give them a reading in my home or something where it's just that person and myself. And at the end of the reading, after they've heard the things that they have to say, that they're able to open up to me. Everyone has a ghost story, John. I guess I think they do reach us, but I think most people feel it's either their just their own inner thoughts that they're hearing, or they, you know, they feel like they fell asleep and it was only a dream. Most people will not admit to the communication.
So you discovered you had psychic abilities at six, and somebody said, "Don't worry about it, Chuck. One of these days, you're going to wear a real badge." So when did you decide to be a policeman?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I'm not going to give my age away here. You can see my photograph on my website. I'm old enough to have fought in the Vietnam War, so that'll give you a little bit of a clue. I would say that particular voice was not a voice I would hear. I've probably heard it four or five times only during my whole life. And usually it's a time when I need a piece of information. And what happened with the second book I wrote, The Psychic Cop, had to do with the morning I'm riding around in a police car. And, you know, this is before I started meditation classes and wanting to get into this stuff. It was another time that I heard the voice. And early in the morning, no other car on the road, just myself. And I'll never forget turning the corner onto this one street. And I heard what I thought was a message coming over the police radio for either, you know, a car accident or a house, you know, alarm or something like that.
Yeah.
But the voice was the same voice I heard as a child. And mm-hmm. he said, "You will be known as the psychic cop." And I honestly looked in my rearview mirror to see if there was a cruiser behind me with a, you know, with the PA system on playing jokes on me, because at that point in my career, people didn't know that I was even interested in this stuff. I kept it very, very quiet. The little bit of, you know, past experiences, I was intrigued by it, but I just didn't have time to look into the afterlife. I was busy with the present life.
Gotcha. So you got into police work, what, in your 20s? I'm guessing.
Early 20s, yes. And I, you know, even that happened funny because I had the message as a child, but it wasn't like I went my entire teenage years and, you know, going into the military wanting to become a police officer. I didn't, because I think that's why I brought up the Vietnam War. If you recall back then, cops were pigs and no one liked them, and it was really the last thing I wanted to become. However, what happened to me when I moved, because of the military, I ended up in the Boston area near Salem. I ended up moving into Salem, and a friend of mine worked for an ambulance service, a private ambulance service. And one night, I guess his partner on the ambulance called in sick, and they didn't have anyone to work on the ambulance. And he called me up and said, "Hey, Chuck, do you know how to work a stretcher? Do you want to work on the ambulance with me?" And I'd never done this before. So I saw it as something interesting to do, and I enjoyed it. I became an EMT, and then from an EMT and working the ambulance, I started studying to become a police officer and ended up in the police field.
Okay. Well, so you served. You said you had said that you were old enough to your Vietnam era within the demographic that would serve. But you did serve. What, infantry, or what'd you do?
I was in the Navy. Served in the Navy on an aircraft carrier, and you know, went over to Vietnam for 12 months.
All right. Well, thanks for the service. I'll tell you, I carried a 1A draft card for a long time, and then it turned into a 1H. And somehow or another, I just wound up with really high lottery numbers until they stopped. I guess when they went to 1H, they had stopped the lottery. I don't really know how they made the selection after that, but
I had joined the Navy, too, because I felt my luck with the lottery isn't that great. So I went ahead and joined the Navy, and kind of glad I did. I got to see the world, and I did learn a lot. I did like it.
Yeah, I went to, well, I saw the writing on the wall when I saw the card show up and went, "Oh, dear, 1A. I went to the Air Force, couldn't pass the vision. Went to the Navy, couldn't pass the vision because I wanted to fly. And I thought, okay, well, let's just, almost didn't get out of the Marine recruitment office. It was like, wait a minute. It's like, no. I'm sure somebody will get back to me. I'm leaving.
You know? I have a feeling.
So You know, we've all seen, well, we haven't all, but many of us have seen that movie, The Departed, about the darker aspects of the Boston Police Department. Of course, that's a movie and a novel and a story and all of that, but so how rough is it up in that part of the world as far as, you know, it's a very, you know, Boston's very civilized, Salem's, and it goes back to the founding of the country and so forth, but... I mean, how deep does the muck get as a police officer? Is it about the same as it is everywhere else, or does it have some unique qualities to the crime there?
I would have to call it just a very nice community. We probably 35, 40,000 people there, and it is a college community. Salem State Community College is right there in the city, so that. Students, you know, the college kids can keep you pretty busy, but danger-wise, I wouldn't call it that bad, you know, not compared to some places.
All right, well, you know, we're all influenced by the things that we are shown, and if we're shown enough of one thing, we assume that that's just how it is, and it's gang this and clique that, and everybody's heavily armed, and, you know, the cops are this way or the cops are that way, and... You know, it's just so easy to generalize, and just saying it's so easy to generalize as a generalization, it's almost impossible to keep from doing it. But so when you became a police officer, you had military experience. So let me go back. You're put wise that you have this gift, and I take it sort of sits there for a while and then begins to reveal itself more frequently as your life goes on. Until you're actually able to apply it to your work.
That's pretty much what happened, with the exception of, you know, don't forget, I'm working in a community already rather tarnished with the, I'll put it this way, our police patch is one of a witch riding on a broomstick. So when you couple what I do with that, you know, you got to be a little careful with a court case, because, you know, if you're... If the defense attorney realizes, you know, well, where did you get the information that are, you know, that led to the arrest of my client? How do you turn around and say, well, we've got a psychic on the department that gave us the information? I did what I recommend all police officers do. There's a sixth sense that we all have. And I think police officers, through trial and error, develop that sixth sense a lot stronger than the average person. A quick example would be, I'll never forget the very first traffic stop I made, where I thought this was the greatest thing. This, in a quiet neighborhood, this young man blows through two or three stop signs, and he's going a little over the speed limit with children out, you know, playing and stuff. So I'm getting ready to write my very first ticket, and I pull him over, and I get his license and registration. I'm sitting there and writing everything down and making sure I got every little line filled in on the, on the ticket book. And I finish it, sign my name to it, rip it off. I'm going to go hand it to the driver. And as I walk up to the car, I'm looking, and he disappeared in thin air. He's gone. The point was, it was a stolen car, and I didn't call it in, so no one was able to radio back and tell me that it was stolen. And the young man took advantage of the fact that I wasn't positioning myself to look at the ticket I'm writing, plus look at him. So as he's running down the street, I'm busy crossing my T's and dotting my I's and not paying attention. So, you know, we did recover the car and give it back to the owner. We never did find the guy that was driving it, though. So the point of that would be that police officers learn from experience. And I think if they're making an arrest and something goes bad, and say one out of three persons, one attends up to one person that, you know, in the group, turns out to be an attacker, you may want to look at the situation and say, what clues did I have that he's the one I should have kept my eye on? So I think we all develop the sixth sense, police officers do, in a different way than the average person, because police put it to use 40 hours a week.
So, but this was at the beginning stage of your career.
Very beginning, yes. Yes, and every case I went on, if something would go awry, or I don't know, I just started wondering, like, why I would make decisions I would make, you know, like, why would I choose to turn right on one street instead of left on a street? But I have to admit, with me, things got a little weird, in that on occasion I'd be riding and I would see a particular intersection on my beat area, and maybe in that little daydream or vision or whatever would pop in, I would see like a fire truck, an ambulance, two cars hitting each other head on, and I'd look at it and go, wow, what was that? And within a minute or two, get a radio call that there's a bad accident at that exact intersection. So, you know, on my way to that location, even if it's on the, you know, an area that's not even my area to cover, I would always say, well, why am I seeing this before it even happens? And I got very inquisitive, so I started reading books about psychic abilities, mediumship, and actually went in and had a psychic reading at one point to see if this stuff was for real.
And they said?
John, it was the most interesting experience of my life. I went in and I sat in front of a woman, and I got to admit, it was a little hokey. They had the little round table with the purple cloth on it, the crystal ball on it, the stones everywhere, the crystals everywhere, and my heart was pounding out of my chest, like, what am I doing here? Why am I?
All right, hold tough. You should always check the coasttocoastam.com website. We have new Mars rover panorama. We have volcanic activity and Atlantis. And a new Mr. George Norrie profile as well. In the news, ghostly apparition caught on camera at Perth Tea Room. UFOs over Colorado, maybe. Pandemonium as pandas invade London Underground, and the extreme heat breaks more than 3,000 records this week. Also a poison for assassins. See what I mean? Something for everybody. And we're talking with Chuck Bergman tonight, and we'll be back. The psychic cop from Salem, Mass. And he was just talking about how weird it was when he went to his first little round table meeting with a woman, and the crystals were there and everything else. And we'll find out what happened then. When Coast to Coast AM continues. John B. in with you tonight, covering for ship's captain George Norrie, who's traveling. He'll be back on Monday. Okay, Chuck Bergman, psychic cop. You were just sitting down at the table and the crystals came out and you thought it might be a little on the hokey side. And then what happened?
Well, John, it got a little interesting in that it was the way the lady had put both palms up, you know, her two hands together. She said, your mother is coming in like this, and she's got a little present with a little ribbon on it, and she's handing it to you, which I thought was a little strange because on the day of that reading, it happened to be my birthday, and there was no way that this woman would know that. So I'm thinking, like, maybe lucky guess, or maybe she's just trying to say mom is trying to put gifts upon me or something like that. So, you know, I didn't just jump to conclusions with it. And she went through probably another 10 minutes worth of stuff that was, I'd have to say yes to pretty much everything she said, but it was nothing really gripping. It was nothing that made me say, wow, this woman's talking with my mom that's on the other side. It really didn't feel like that at the time. And, you know, we ended the session. I'm ready to leave. And I'll never forget, I had my hand on the doorknob ready to open the door to leave. And she says, oh, by the way, Chuck, come back anytime and have a reading with me. She said, I love talking to your mom. And I loved her British accent.
Oh, man.
That did it. That, to me, was my mom's thumbprint. It was her DNA. It was my mother. And especially where, you know, my family growing up in Florida with a mom with a British accent in Florida where you have the Southern accent going on, you know, she stood out like a sore thumb. And that was her claim to fame, was having that accent. She was very proud of that accent. So to hear a woman in Boston who had never met my mom come out with a statement like that was just, it, I turned around and walked back in, and I said, well, why didn't you tell me that in the beginning? We I would have just stopped at that point. We didn't have to go any further, you know? And later became very good friends with the lady, you know, and actually went to her for meditation classes where I learned to work on my brain and learn to turn the chatter down and hear the voices on the other side. And, you know, a lot of those techniques I still use today when I do readings, whether it's, you know, phone readings, private readings, or in front of a large group.
So, was this while you were a policeman?
Yes, it was. I would say okay. I was probably maybe 10 years into, you know, into my career at that point.
Okay. Well, so now the other policemen are beginning to get wise to the fact that you're thinking in these terms and in this way?
Yes. In fact, I have one quick story that will kind of purify this, where we had moved into a new police station, had a beautiful auditorium in there, And I ran all the video editing equipment in the back room, you know, because we would do different seminars in the auditorium and have, I would videotape it. We had two robotic cameras and, you know, I just enjoyed doing that type of work. However, one day when the auditorium was empty, one of the officers walked in and we were shooting the breeze. And while I was talking to him, I saw what looked like real hoop earrings hanging on both of his ears. And this is a guy that you would never expect to see wearing earrings. So,
right.
And they're not really on him. However, I'm seeing them. And I can only compare the vision of what I saw would be when you look at a weather forecaster and they've got real cheesy looking graphics going on that, you know, you just look at it and say, nah, that's a silly looking cloud with a thunderbolt or whatever it's supposed to be. That's how silly it looked on both of the guys' ears. And I looked at him, I said, your mom passed away recently, didn't she? And he said, yes. And I said, man, I said, I just got to ask you, what's going on with hoop earrings? Because I knew there was some type of a message or something I was supposed to say to him, because for some reason this was really being shown to me in a way that I couldn't ignore it. And he said, yeah, he said, my son came home with hoop earrings last night and a tattoo on his arm. And he said, I gathered all his stuff up in the room and kicked him out of the house. And we had a big fight and he's out of the house now. So it was pretty wild that the hoop earrings had such a meaning to him. And it was odd that I wasn't really asking to connect with spirit at that moment or asking for messages or trying to do it. But yet, you know, I would be shown the earrings and have such a message. And I'm sure that the statements I made following that from his mother had an impact on him as to, you know, how to handle his son at that point.
So this isn't just a matter of, so you were actually in the man's head. So when you say if someone says you're a psychic, that doesn't mean necessarily that you're a prophet or a vision seer alone. You're actually able to pick up on what is top of mind on somebody that's standing across the room from you if you're focused on that person.
See, I don't think it's really coming from the person, because I've tried many, many experiments where someone will, you know, just roughly say, write a number from 1 to 100. And then keep saying it over in your mind, and I'm going to tell you what that number is. Can't do that at all. I've tried. I've spent hours testing it to see if that's really what I'm doing or not. In that case, with the earrings, it was the officer's mother in spirit upset with her son for throwing, you know, her grandson out in the street because he had earrings put in.
That's just remarkable. So as time goes by, I mean, were you able to walk up to a kid and go, hey, kid, stop tearing the hole in the plastic bag and stealing those toy army soldiers there at the drugstore. Put that candy back. I mean, was it stuff like that?
Not really, no. But I would get, if I think all people get that so-called gut feeling when you know something's wrong or something's just not sitting right. But when I would get the feeling, sometimes I'd get an image to go along with it and an extra feeling, if you will. But it wasn't really helping me in my police work in Salem that much. It was after I retired that I started putting it to use.
So in other words, your experience with the Salem Police Department, you said it was a lovely community. It's an old community, but it's small and it's peaceful. And about the most radical thing there, I would think, would be the witch and her broom on the patch. But it was actually after you left that somewhat... I would think it would be sort of a spirit-charged environment, given everything that happened in Salem over the years and the religious motivations behind it, or at least the stated ones of those people who were perpetrating it. It's actually when you left that part of the country.
It really was, and one of the cute stories in my new book is the time when I became very friendly with world-renowned medium James Van Praagh. I met him at a book signing for one of his books, and we became friends right away and started chatting back and forth in a chat room when they were unheard of to the rest of the public, really. James was on the cutting edge of having technology out there, such as a chat room where he could help grieving parents and stuff like that. You know, they could log in and not even have to say anything, just kind of read the comments from other parents that are logging in, and he may be there to offer a little support or reading or whatever. But it was through him that I've learned a lot of the stuff that I'm doing now. Even meeting him was a little bit of a problem in that he was nationally known at the time when I met him. And when I developed to the point where I was giving readings to small groups in private, you know, like keeping it away from the police chief and people that I work for, there was that one point in time where I got called into the chief's office, and I'll never forget, I walk in and, you know, he says, "Sit down, Charlie, we've got a problem." And as I look over his shoulder, in the background is his computer with the James Van Prague website on it. And at that time, I was, and I'm still a practitioner on his website as a practicing medium and, you know, someone that he's tested. But I'll never forget, the chief said, "You know, we've got to talk." He says, "You're walking around carrying a gun and you're hearing voices." He said, "Something, you know, we've got a little problem here." So I really did make a bit of an agreement that I would keep, you know, the two worlds separate, I guess. The police world, I would, when I worked for the department, that's what I did. And when I got off duty, I could, it was up to me to do what I wanted to do.
Well, so did any of the other officers working with you begin to get wise to what you were able to do? They begin to question you, like, "How'd you know that?"
There was one in particular, a Lieutenant Conrad Prusniewski, who shared an area where I worked. We had offices side by side, and as I was developing with this ability, we'd spend our mornings. We worked in special operations together, and I would go into his office. We'd have coffee and sit there and chit-chat, and then as soon as the other officers would leave, we'd close the door, and then I could tell them about my meditation classes or reading or, you know, different adventures I'd have with the psychic abilities, you know, while things were progressing. So he played a role in at least keeping me grounded with what we were talking about, and he was very interested in what I was doing, but it gave me an out where at least I could get it off my chest, talk about it, and then I didn't have to talk about it to other people around the department.
So you didn't just go and start, "Hey guys, in the make ready room or whatever," and start talking about this stuff. You kept it on the down low.
I did, but it was funny how many officers would contact me. They'd come into my office, close the door, and say, "I'd like to come to your house for a reading. What's the deal with it?" And, you know, I had a tough time with my dad. He passed away, and I never got to say goodbye or whatever. But it was always with the agreement that I not tell anyone. So yeah, it was funny how more and more, I probably gave readings to about 40% or more, to 40% of the officers or more, and they did keep it quiet, and they didn't want other people to know that, you know, we had done that. And, you know, it, for me, it was kind of a cool thing. One day, I guess after I'd retired, I heard that there was a group of patrolmen in the muster room, in the guard room, where someone brought up, "Hey, did you see Chuck was on, I was on an A&E program where they did a profile on me." And they were laughing at me, you know, saying, "Oh, he thinks he can talk to the dead and this and that." But I got an email from someone saying that a certain officer jumped up and was ready to actually fight for me. And he said, "You know, when my mom died, I went to see Chuck, and that's the only reason I'm here today. He really gave me hope that my mom was okay on the other side. And he told me things that he had no way of knowing. And I'm not going to let anyone stand here and bash the guy." So it made me feel good that there were, you know, some people are going to laugh about it, some people are not going to believe it, and other people are going to stand up and fight for you.
You know, I'm just all over the place with this because, you know, there are one or two ways to do it. Have a conversation like a couple of guys sitting around with a few million of our closest friends, or go down a list. And I'm not really a list guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you were saying a while ago, maybe I should be, but, you know, you were saying a while ago that you'd sort of have a little bit of a little daydream about an intersection down there where something's going to happen. Then a few minutes later, you'd hear that something was happening. So is it a feeling or is it a vision or is it a thought or maybe is it one of each? Just depends on the situation.
John, it's kind of hard to explain sometimes. Sometimes it will look like a vision or like a daydream. And what I challenge everyone to do is start studying those daydreams when they do come in. You know, is it in color? How long does it last? How much information do you get out of that daydream? And is it just like a little flash where you have to build into it yourself? And even start paying attention to the way you talk to yourself during the day. I know I don't walk around going, hey, Chuck, guess what? It's quarter after 12, time to start the lawnmower up and mow the yard. You know, you right. might, but you might see yourself sitting on the mower cutting the grass. Or, you know what I mean? Or you may see the grass real high. It's funny how our subconscious will consciously speak to us. And when you do a reading, sometimes it can be like that. One of my favorite stories is a female officer had come into my, I can use her name, Cindy, came into my office one day, closed the door, and she said, I don't know if you can help me with this or not. She said, but I just want to know, am I ever going to have children? My husband and I would love to have children, and it's just not happening. And her dad had passed away probably 3 or 4 months earlier, and I said, let me just see if your dad on the other side can give us any information on this. And it was immediate that I saw him in spirit. I mean, literally saw him standing next to his daughter, but he was leaning back and he had a baby wrapped up in the baby blanket in the left arm and one in the right arm, both wrapped in blue. So I'm thinking like he's trying to tell me, yes, she will have children, twins and baby boy, you know, two boys.
Yep. But that's what it sounds like.
That's a hard bill to fit, though, because all those elements have to be correct. You know, number one, she's got to get pregnant. Number two, it's got to be twins. Number three, it's got to be boys. It's like, wow, how can all that happen? Well, fortunately, like a month later, she came in all excited. She said, well, everything's on track. I just found out. I went to the doctors yesterday. I'm pregnant. I can't wait. I can't wait. So I'm going, oh, at least one out of the three I've gotten right, you know, because
yeah, good. We're off to a good start,
you know, I don't like failure either. And we'll put it this way. 9 months later, she had a baby boy. A little bit of a disappointment until I learned that when she got pregnant, her sister got pregnant at the same time and also had a baby boy.
Oh, so you got to be kidding me, man.
I'm dead serious. So, you know, it's like, so I know when I get these images and I know when to trust them. And the problem can be with interpreting. And in that case, I told her, you're going to have twin boys. And I was wrong. But, you know, I still appreciate the way it turned out, and I still laugh at the way it turned out. So sometimes when we get these premonitions or images, it's you got to be careful how you interpret it and then speak it to the person that's getting the reading.
Let me just ask Nathan there, how are we doing for time, pal? My clock's not with yours. We got 2 minutes out? Mm-hmm. Okay, 3 minutes out. Okay, swell. Well, all right, take a couple of minutes here, and let me see. Let me ask you something. If you don't want to talk about this, that's completely all right now, and I totally respect it. It's about life-threatening situations where the guns may come out.
Okay.
Have you been in a situation, first of all, it's a two-part question. The first part is, what is that creepy sort of dreamlike, otherworldly thing that seems to settle over the scene when something is about to happen? It's not necessarily because somebody's over there just, you know, foaming at the mouth and, you know, pawing the ground like a bull that's about to get you. But it's just that creepy... That creepy other side of the veil kind of thing. Well, we're down to 2 minutes. Look, what I want to ask you is what is that creepy feeling that settles down upon people when a life-threatening situation is imminent? And are you able to get a jump on that and perhaps cut that off rather than let it become inevitable? Now, I'll let you cogitate on that one, since that's one of those John Wells shotgun out the back door, complicated beyond any kind of cohesiveness kind of questions. Ah, boy. John Wells in for George Norrie tonight. We're talking with Chuck Bergman, the psychic cop. And I bet maybe he can use his psychic powers to figure out what the heck I was trying to ask him. Yeah, I think he's already done it. All right, we'll be back. We'll take our break. And thanks for being with us tonight, Friday night, Coast to Coast AM.